You're listening to The Third Eye with A.B. Philbin-Bowman. Now, this weekend, Barack Obama signaled a revolution in America's response to climate change by appointing Harvard physicist John Holdren as director of White House science and technology policy. At the same time, we've seen the European Union, which was formerly leading the fight on climate change, backing down. And we're joined to discuss this by Dr. Meyer Hillman, a leading climate expert and also the author of How We Can Save the Planet. Dr. Hillman, you're very welcome to The Third Eye.
Thank you.
Can I ask you, first of all, what's your sense of where the politics of this is at relative to where the science is at? Are the two compatible, or are we seriously out of sync?
Well, one can, of course, be encouraged by policy changes, which are a distinct improvement on what has occurred in the past. But that doesn't necessarily mean to say that one can wholeheartedly welcome them as being adequate to
right.
the purpose.
I mean, it would be pretty hard to be worse than the last incumbent of the White House on the issue of climate change.
Well, absolutely. It could hardly be worse. But to a degree, that could also be said about the European position, as you indicated in your opening remarks. In both instances, the inadequacy of facing up to the reality that the world now is on a trajectory towards ecological Armageddon. And if that sounds to your listeners like an exaggerated position, let me put the following to you, namely, most people have seen those iconic images of the ice cliffs of the South Antarctic, of the Antarctic ice shelf collapsing into the adjacent South Atlantic. Do they fondly imagine that if the world were to stop burning any fossil fuels, those cliff faces of ice would reinstate themselves into position even in 1,000 years? The answer must be no. In other words, we are already beyond the tipping point, and what we have got to now do is to dedicate ourselves to slowing down the process, but that will not be achieved by making relatively modest improvements on what we've been doing in the past.
So if our policy was dictated purely by scientific evidence you refer to, what would it mean for an average person and how they live their life, the changes that they'd have to undertake?
That can be simply answered. The planet has now been established by climate scientists to have a finite capacity to absorb the greenhouse gas emissions from burning fossil fuels incidentally being the accumulation of the sun's energy over millions and millions of years, and within the space of 100 or 200 years we've been burning up those reserves of the sun's energy. But if you take that finite capacity and divide it by the world's population, or the predicted world's population, which will by 2050, so we're told by the demographers, will be about 9 billion people, you come out with a figure which is very little over about a quarter or a half a ton of carbon dioxide emissions per person per year. Now,
you once famously said that essentially, if you know, you get the emissions cut you wanted, that Britain and by extension places like Ireland would basically resemble a fairly poor third world country. That's what it would lead to in terms of practical effects on how we live our lives.
Well, yes, I did perhaps somewhat carelessly describe it in that context. I don't mean to say that the third world countries are associated in the public mind in the West with being sort of poverty stricken and people starving, pot-bellied children, and not being able to make ends meet. I don't view it that way. I made the comparison with third world in the context of their very low use of fossil fuels.
But isn't the reality that, I mean, the way we live is to essentially equate wealth with energy consumption. The wealthier you are, the bigger your house, the bigger your car, the more you fly on holiday, the more you travel, and the more energy you consume. And so essentially what we're asking people to do is to radically change their lifestyles. Maybe human beings just don't want to do that. I mean, maybe they just don't want to make that choice. And it may be irresponsible. Maybe that's just how we want to live.
Well, I'm sure it is. I mean, basically, just below the surface, everybody wants to have their cake and eat it. But this time, we are aware. In the past, we could tell people, look, don't complain about your slice of the cake, so to speak, if you're living in the third world, if you're poor, because economic growth will deliver a larger cake. Therefore, although your slice is smaller, you'll have more cake. Isn't that what you want? You want more cake. You don't want a bigger slice. And, of course, people in the past have been able to respond to that.